As we kick off the new year, many of us resolve to grow closer to God. But how do we actually do that? Well, we have a resource to help you do just that through our free ebook, 5 Ways to Connect with God. This resource shares 5 simple but powerful spiritual practices to deepen your relationship with God, from cultivating thankfulness to asking God for a word for the year. This guide will help you to find rest, focus, and renewed connection with God as we begin the new year. Download your copy now at premierinsight.org. Start your year off closer to God. That's premierinsight.org. Now, let's get started with today's episode.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Thank you for listening to the show that brings you the thought and theology of C.S. Lewis with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources, and podcasts. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. But now for today's show.
I am delighted to be joined once again by Dr. Holly Ordway. Holly is the Cardinal Francis George Professor of Faith and Culture at the Word on Fire Institute and Visiting Professor of Apologetics at Houston Christian University. She's written numerous books and articles about various members of the Inklings, including an absolutely fantastic spiritual biography of J.R.R. Tolkien called Tolkien's Faith, which we've talked about at length on other shows. But today we're going to be talking about Christmas. Let's talk about the letters from Father Christmas, the Father Christmas letters, whichever way you want to say it. I mean, I'd love to hear your thoughts just around the fact that the name is slightly confusing, but I just want to read in my copy of the book, in the introduction, it says this, which I think is a really lovely sort of grounding for why these letters are so important. It says, to the children of J.R.R. Tolkien, the interest and importance of Father Christmas extended beyond his filling of their stockings on Christmas Eve, for he wrote a letter to them every year in which he described in words and pictures his house, his friends, and the events, hilarious or alarming, at the North Pole. But before we dive into the content of the letters, Holly, would you just say a little bit about the name and the fact that it's potentially called a few different things at different points?
Right. So these letters, whatever we're going to call them, were a family tradition for many years. And so they were called by the children the Father Christmas letters. And then they were collected into a book to, you know, to be shared with the world. And at that point, they decided that letters from Father Christmas sounded more like the title of a book. So really, we can call them either thing. And I tend to bounce back and forth between them. But they are the Father Christmas letters are the letters from Father Christmas. Same thing.
Great.
So these I love these letters. They're just the most fun thing ever. And they really do give us this beautiful window into Tolkien's personality and his creativity. So these letters started in 1920, when he had just one child. His first son, John, was only 3 years old. And he began writing these letters. John had asked, like, who's Father Christmas? And Tolkien, being Tolkien, writes a letter to kind of illustrate this. And it was really simple at first. It was just a letter kind of about his presence. But then he goes on and he writes one of these letters every year for the next 23 years. and they ended when his youngest child, Priscilla's daughter, was 14. And at that point, the last letter says, you know, now you're too old to be hanging up your stocking. We're gonna wrap this up. And so I think, again, a really sweet move. The letters have to end sometime. And he realizes, I think, that better to kind of wrap it up than let it kind of fizzle and, like, what, no letter this year? So, you know, Priscilla's 14. Okay, we're gonna wrap it up now. But in the meantime, we have these letters that then become a part of the childhood of all 4 children. And the children recalled that it was more or less a secret, but not a rigidly held secret. At some point, they figured out that it was their dad who was doing this, because he would write this letter and it would appear on the mantelpiece. And sometimes it would appear dusted with snow, you know, or maybe be brought by the postman. So you can picture Tolkien, you know, kind of waiting outside the door to hand it over. And he would create not just the letter, but the envelope and the stamp. He would write these little North Pole stamps and cut them out and paste them on. I mean, the level of detail was just off the charts. And so the children loved them and kept them. And Tolkien, I think, did this in, like, especially after he got into the first couple of years and they became more elaborate. He would write them, but then he would illustrate them, some years more than others, depending on his time that he had available. And they'd kept them. And eventually they would figure out, you know, okay, it's dad. But the older children would kind of keep mum about it so the younger children could enjoy the anticipation until they in turn figured it out. So it's just such a sweet, sweet family tradition. And also a really amazing glimpse into Tolkien's creativity. The letters, I mean, there's various editions of them, some with more than others. This is one that has the one of his illustrations of Father Christmas on the cover. And there's now a deluxe edition, folio edition, that has all of the letters and their envelopes. So we can see, for instance, the way that he would make the letter and then also make the envelope with the stamp. That's the Aurora Borealis over the North Pole. He even drew the cancellation of it. I mean, he thought of everything. And in it, we have this figure, Father Christmas. And it's really interesting, too, the way that Tolkien negotiates the Father Christmas mythology and Christianity, because he makes Father Christmas his own figure, and he dates him to the birth of Christ. So he's like 1,927 years old at a certain point. So he's associated with the birth of Christ, but not kind of replacing him in the mythology. And I think that's really clever. And there's various references to saints, for instance, in that. So we have a kind of parallel festive mythology that he's able to let the children enjoy, but it doesn't push out the celebration of the birth of Christ, which is just a really, I think, sophisticated move and a very kind of fatherly insight to say, I want my children to enjoy this, but I want them also to see that Christmas is about Christ. It's like, oh, we get both.
Yeah. Holly, who are some of the key characters that feature in the letters? Because it's not just Father Christmas, is it? There's a whole plethora of different characters. And do we have any idea where he perhaps drew some of his inspiration from for some of these characters?
Yeah, it's really fascinating because Father Christmas is the first character to show up. But then not long after, we get the North Polar Bear, who becomes a key figure. And the North Polar Bear even writes some of the letters or adds in his little bit. And even Tolkien even does different handwriting. Father Christmas, being very old, has shaky handwriting. And the polar bear, having a big clumsy paw, makes these bold strokes. And of course, the North Polar Bear is attempting to be, he's supposed to be Father Christmas's assistant, but he often does things like accidentally, you know, spilling all the ink for the letters, or accidentally flooding the house because he let his bathtub overflow. He's taking a bath. So that's, he's like a kind of a playful figure that the Tolkien children loved. And then as the years go on, we get more characters. We have an elf called Ilbereth, who the name could have come right out of Legendarium. So I think he's just borrowing from that. And then we get a hint of conflict because we have these goblins who, again, straight out of The Hobbits or from George MacDonald's stories, which is where the Hobbit goblins came from. And these goblins are always trying to invade. And so at times the North Pole Labor has to fight them off. There's one great picture in one of the letters, the Christmas 1933, where we can see the North Polar Bear fighting off the goblins that are attempting to take over. And so we get all these adventures going on, and we get some polar bear cubs later on. We get the North Polar Bear's nephews. So there's this whole cast of characters eventually that's unfolding in the letters. Of course, then the letters get longer and more complex. And I think it really just shows the vitality of Tolkien's creativity. Like, he just couldn't not be creative. Mm-hmm. He couldn't just have letters from Father Christmas. It just, these other characters come bundling in because his imagination was just fizzing with energy.
And one of the things that struck me, as well as all these incredible characters, that, you know, there's a great seal, the man in the moon makes an appearance, a snowman who's Tolkien, who's Father Christmas's gardener. There's all these extra characters. But then he also seems to throw in, just a, sort of as a random aside, a new language, a different alphabet. I mean, do we know if he created those things just for the letters, or was that perhaps something he was thinking about already and just had a spare alphabet up his sleeve? As you do.
As one does. Yeah. I don't know for sure what the details are. I know he has the runic alphabet that he uses. He has this goblin alphabet. I don't know the details on that, but languages and alphabets were something that Tolkien just had fun with. So that's not surprising that they go over into the letters. Another thing that does go into it is quite a lot of genuine astronomy. So there's a lot of things about stars and planets. There's a comet, there's an eclipse, and all of that actually tracks to real world astronomy. And that was something that Tolkien was interested in, and that he encouraged the children to be interested in. And his daughter Priscilla recalled that, especially she and her brother Christopher, learned a lot about astronomy encouraged by the Father Christmas letters. Wow. So I think that's interesting too, that he's bundling in science in this. We don't often think about Tolkien as interested in the sciences, but he was. Botany, not surprisingly, but astronomy. Mm.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
We're going to take a quick break now, but if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
I don't know about you, but sometimes I have big questions about life and I want thoughtful answers. That's why we're excited that we have this resource to offer called Ask N.T. Wright Anything, 12 Crucial Questions About Faith, the Bible, and Life. This ebook distills wisdom from one of the world's leading theologians, N.T. Wright, tackling topics like life after death, the reliability of scripture, predestination, and more. It's our hope that this resource will strengthen your faith and deepen your understanding. And here's the best part. It's our thank you gift when you give to support Premier Insight this month. So don't miss this opportunity to grow in your faith. Visit premierinsight.org to give today. That's premierinsight.org. Thank you for your generosity. And now let's get back to today's episode.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation.
And one of the things that he's clearly doing in that is combining fantasy and realism. Like at one point, he's talking about these wild goblin stories, the polar bear, the red gnome. But then he's also talking about things like whooping cough, evacuees, historical kings, and as you've already mentioned, saints. I mean, that's quite a spectacular. It's quite spectacular the way he does that, isn't it? To combine fantasy and realism in the way that he does.
Yeah, that's one thing I love about these letters is that they really give us a, you know, year by year, we see again and again, this is the way his mind works. And I think that's a good insight, Ruth, because his creativity was not somehow in a bubble, you know, entirely separate from the real world. The same way with, you know, with his literary inspirations, he was reading modern literature. He was keeping up to date with the news. He read the newspaper, you know, every day. He was really connected to ordinary life. He was not just some, you know, brain in an ivory tower, quite the opposite. He was really grounded in just everyday life. And he uses fantasy as his mode of exploring the meaning of this, but is grounded in this day-to-day life. And so we see, you know, with the Father Christmas letters, we see him, yeah, recognizing like, yeah, Father Christmas is having some difficulty with the presents this year because of, you know, the war's going on and there's all this trouble in the world. And I think there's a kind of honesty that I see in all of his writings about that he's not ignoring difficulties in the world. He uses fantasy as a mode to explore reality. He uses fantasy for enjoyment and to bring joy to his children, but he doesn't do it in an escapist way. And that's something he talks about in his great essay on fairy stories, the difference between escape and escapism. Mm. And escape, he considers to be a good thing, escaping into a world that gives you a sense of the possibilities of life, that gives you a sense of meaning beyond maybe the grim and unpleasant reality that you're dealing with just at the moment. But escapism is different. Escapism is a denial of reality and a turning away from it. And Tolkien never did that. And I think that enriches his fantasy, that his joy is always rooted in reality. It's not a turning a blind eye to the difficulties of life, including, you know, the war.
Yeah. And I mean, do you, as I was reading it, I was thinking, were the letters ever a kind of clever literary device to dodge some of the presents that the children have put on their list? There's a couple of lines where he says, I get poorer and poorer. Still, I hope that I've managed to bring you all something you wanted, though not everything you asked for. There are a few things missing, but I hope you have what you want. You know, there's just a couple of little throwaway lines like that, aren't you? Which I just thought that is clever.
It's very clever. Yes. And I do think that was a sort of fatherly move of saying, okay, I can't afford to get the kids this with four, and a presser's salary was not high. He couldn't afford to get them all the presents that they would have wanted. Mm-hmm. Isn't that like the perennial parental challenge? So having it come in a letter with Father Christmas saying, well, the goblins have made a mess of things, or, you know, there are all these disruptions in the North Pole, and I tried, but I couldn't get you everything. It really takes a sting out of not having the present that they were maybe hoping for. Yeah. So it's like, nice move, Dad.
Yes, that's definitely fun. Softens the blow, doesn't it? I mean, Holly, you've definitely touched on this, but do you think any of the letters reflect themes that we have found in his more famous works like The Hobbit, The Lord of the Rings, some of his other great literary pieces of fiction and prose?
I would say probably not, because in one sense, because these are their own thing. These are, you know, a jeu d'esprit. They're his fatherly love for his children coming out in this imaginative creation. So I don't think they're not really so much themes that are operating in it, but I do think there's an underlying ethos that's the same. And I think what we see very clearly is the importance of joy and fun, which was a really important part of his personality, of his spirituality. Mm. Something that he, you know, partook in from his Oratorian upbringing. The Oratory of Birmingham, where he was raised, St. Philip Neri, its founder, really puts an emphasis on humor and joy. I mean, Philip is called the saint of joy. And that's something that was really formative for Tolkien as a boy. And I think it connects, and we see that in The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings, this sort of the eruption of a sort of joy and fun, especially in The Hobbits. And I think we see that also in the Father Christmas letters. And I think that's something not to be taken for granted, because Tolkien went through so much suffering in his life. He's orphaned. He, you know, fought in the Great War. He was ill for very often. So very easily he could have just been quite grim. And he had a sort of a depressive streak that would often come out, but it was balanced by this joy and fun. And I think it's remarkable that he was able to not just preserve, but cultivate this sense of joy and fun when it would have been almost under pressure to let it die out.
Yeah.
And he didn't.
Do you think we see something of Tolkien as a storyteller that we perhaps don't see elsewhere in these letters?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think we see the same storyteller. We see that amazing creativity, and we see also his openness to sort of inventing on the fly. Mm-hmm. You know, he didn't sit down in 1920 and say, "Ah, yes, for the next 23 years, I'm going to do this and let's plot out." No, he things unfolded as they came, and then he worked in things that were happening in the wider world. And I think we see that also in all of his writing. He was very much open to kind of letting his creative imagination work at levels that he wasn't consciously aware. Much of The Lord of the Rings, he didn't know where it was going. He certainly did not have it sort of mapped out in detail of what would happen. At one point he got to the gates of Moria and stopped because he didn't know what was going to happen. And I think that sense of tapping into a deeper creativity than his conscious mind had access to is characteristic of all of his work. And we see that, I think, here in the way that, in a much lighter vein, in the way that he just, sure, let's bring in the elves, let's bring in the goblins, hey, more polar bears, why not?
And I also love that he writes himself into the letters a little bit as well, doesn't he? He says, the polar bear got your father's scribble today and was very puzzled by it. I told him it looked like old lecture notes and he laughed. He says he thinks Oxford is quite a mad place if people lecture such stuff. And I don't suppose anyone listens to it. There's just some brilliant moments like that where it's really sort of self-critical, but so humorous, isn't it?
I mean, he had this great capacity for laughing at himself. And I think that is a good part of why he was able to stay so balanced, you know, through his whole life, because he became a major, like in his retirement, major literary figure, and people all around the world, you know, sending him fan mail. And it would have been very easy to let it go to his head. And it didn't. It's quite remarkable. It didn't. He stayed pretty grounded and he just wrote lots and lots of letters in reply. And I think that ability to kind of poke fun at himself and, even his own handwriting, which having read some of his manuscripts in the Bodleian, that, you know, his handwriting ranges from beautiful calligraphy to sort of squiggles that his son Christopher remarked at one point look like, you know, like EKG sort of readings. Like, what does this even say? So he was poking fun at himself for a reason.
And Holly, just as we come to the end of this, have you got a favourite story or a favourite moment in the Christmas letters which really stick out to you as a brilliant way of celebrating Christmas or very typically Tolkien?
I would say that it's more the overall combination of it, the whole arc of it, rather than any one thing. I just love that he was a busy man and he had lots of projects always sort of half-baked, most of which he didn't bring to completion. And yet he chose to prioritize this thing for his family. And I think he probably had somewhere in the back of his mind the idea that they might be shared with a wider audience because they were very carefully preserved. So I think it's very much in keeping with sort of his approach that they would eventually be shared. They were personal, but they weren't exclusively so. But still, you know, during the whole time I was writing, it's just for the family. Mm-hmm. And he's devoting the time, some years more, some years less, to doing this thing for the joy of his children. There's a purity to that that I just love. And there's also a non-commercial element to it. Like he wants to avoid the commercialism of Christmas. Well, what does he do? He has a highlight of the Christmas season be his children receiving this letter. So he sort of enacts what he hopes for. It's like, well, I want this to be non-commercial. Okay, here's something I can do to help make it just joyful and fun that doesn't involve buying stuff. And I just love that. And I also love the fact that it gives him really an outlet for his art. Because Tolkien was, I think, a very talented amateur artist. And the Father Christmas letters are just a joy to look at. And just the sheer exuberance and fun of his art is just absolute delight. And I just love seeing that angle of Tolkien as well.
Yeah. Oh, Holly, thank you so much. It's been an absolute delight chatting about Christmas with you. And all that's left for me to say is wish you a happy Christmas and a jolly new year. And is there anything that Tolkien would have added to the Christmas wishes, do you think?
I mean, I think he would just hope that we would appreciate that it's the celebration of the Nativity. So I think he would remind us of that and then wish us a happy Christmas.
Brilliant. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast with me, Ruth Jackson. Many of the topics that we've touched on today are discussed in greater detail on earlier episodes of the programme. Check out our archive of past shows at premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, videos, and podcasts. Plus, if you register on our website or sign up for our newsletter there, then you will get exclusive access to new content, free resources, and more. That's premierunbelievable.com.
What did you think of today's show? Are there any topics or works of C.S. Lewis that you would like us to explore next? We would love to hear from you. Send us an email, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Connect with us on X, formerly known as Twitter, @premierunbelievablefe, or drop us a direct message on Instagram or Facebook @premierunbelievable. We have also recently launched on TikTok, so if that's your thing, or you know anyone else who might be interested, then you can find us there @premier.unbelievable. Your feedback and thoughts are so important to us, so please get in touch. If you're enjoying the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it on whatever platform you're listening on, as it helps more people to discover the show. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.